Back here for hour number two of midday with Trey and BK. No, you will not hear Brad Kellner at all this hour, nor have you heard him in the 11 o'clock hour or yesterday. That's because he is celebrating Jewish New Year right now with his family down in Galveston. And is it a happy Rosh Hashanah? Was yesterday Rosh Hashanah Eve, Zach?
You're looking at me like I have any idea what the Jewish holidays are. I have no idea.
I was hoping you just had random trivia in your head because I really don't know. But regardless, happy Jewish New Year to the Kellners, Shoshana, Papa K, Brad, his sisters, and anybody else who celebrates that Jewish holiday. All right, joining us now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. We talk to him every week about the NFL. He is Jason Tebow, head of research for the Red Zone Channel, and living the dream as a stand-up comedian out in Los Angeles. Jason, how's it going today?
Living the dream. I don't know if I'd call it that, brother. Hey, happy Jew year to everybody. I can't stress that enough.
Happy Jew year indeed. And Jason, I actually wanted to ask this before we get into the NFL stuff. Like, what is the typical day like for you? How often are you going up on stage during the week? What do days look like for you, I guess, when you decide to take the mic at night at the Comedy Store?
I get up about 3 to 4 times a week between the Improv, Comedy Store, and Ice House in Pasadena. Those are my three. I mean, Store is my home club. But, you know, 3 to 4, on Tuesdays we find out. Mondays you call all the stores and all the clubs and let them know when you get to go up or when you're available. And then Tuesdays you usually get a text message or an email telling you what days you're at which club, basically. And then you kind of make your schedule through that. Sundays I got to be in at Red Zone at 7 a.m. So that's my Saturdays are rough for 19 Saturdays in a row, so I got to get up so early on Sunday. So usually I don't call in for Saturdays during football season until I get used to getting up that early, because that can be brutal.
You said you get up. How early are you getting up on Sundays?
I got to get up at 6 because I have to be there at 7.
Yeah. Boy, that was one thing. I don't know if you've lived out in on the West Coast your entire life. I lived in Oregon for a year. That was the roughest thing about living on the West Coast, was dealing with the much earlier start times for football. It's 9 a.m. for college games and 10 a.m. for the NFL. It never felt natural to me.
It took maybe 6-7 years for me to get used to it, and then I got the Red Zone job, so it changed really how I watch football. But, yeah, it's really hard to get used to. You know, you're so used to waking up at, you know, I grew up in Chicago area. You know, you'd wake up at 11:30 hungover and turn the TV on and, you know, you're watching a pregame. You do that here, it's halftime of all the games.
Wait a second. You grew up in Chicago. I lived in Chicago for 6 years. Whereabouts in Chicago did you grow up?
I lived in Michigan City, Indiana, right on the lake. And then I lived on the mostly north side.
Oh, very cool.
I lived in Old Town. I lived in every place now when I go back. It's either hip or gay, which is great for real estate. When I was there, it was like knife fights and, you know, trannies walking around.
Yeah,
if you ever want to get into real estate, buy property in wherever I move out of, because 10 years later, it's valuable.
I don't know the last time you've been to Chicago, Jason, but even Cabrini Green, those towers no longer exist over there anymore. I'm not even kidding you. It's a super Target over there now.
Oh, I know, 100%. Yeah, when I grew up, I actually had a gun pulled on me at Cabrini Green one time. I was playing basketball there when I was in high school, and I picked my hat up off the ground when we were leaving, and I had it on, but I guess it was like backwards one way or the other. I just threw my hat on a sweaty head. Some guy lifts up his shirt, and he's like, hey, you want to put that hat on a different way? And he's got a gun in his belt. Man, I just took the hat off. I'm like, I don't even want to wear this damn thing. I'm out of here. I'm gone. Yeah, man, I go back home. I still got a lot of family there, so I go to Chicago maybe twice a year or so.
Okay.
Actually, Steve Renazzisi from the league, he and I, shameless plug, will be at Zany's first week of December.
Oh, really? Cool. We're having Steve on the show next week. I think it's going to be the day before you. Is there anything that that I wouldn't be able to find out doing research that I should ask him about?
I got a great one. He apparently, and I still haven't even teased him about this, he's going to be like, how the hell do you know this? He is a huge fan of Pink, like the musician Pink.
Really?
He went to a huge music festival with, like, well, he's working at it, but took his family. But, like, everybody was there. Muse was playing. Ice Cube was playing. Everybody was at this music fest. Who else? Jane's Addiction was playing. And all he talked about was Pink. I thought he went to a Pink concert. I didn't know he was at this musical festival, and all he saw was Pink, and he couldn't stop. Oh, I can't wait to tease him. And if you guys get to it before me, he's going to be like, how the hell? who is your crack research person that knows I love pink? I've never told anybody that.
All right. Well, it'll be next Thursday for me. So thank you for the insider info there. I really appreciate that. And I will make sure to inquire.
Anything I can do to throw my buddies under the bus.
Exactly. And that's what the podcast is all about, Punch Drunk Sports. If you hadn't had a chance to listen to that yet, please do so. Because Jason, Sam Tripoli, Ari Shafir, sometimes it's a rotating cast of characters. I believe this last week it was you, Steve, and somebody else, too. I'm forgetting off the top of my head, but you guys did a great job nonetheless, Jason.
Yeah, man. It's a fun thing. We've been doing it for coming up on year six. So, yeah, it's great. It's fun. Love doing it. Love talking sports. And, yeah, punchdrunksports.com, or you can find us on iTunes, or we're live every Tuesday from 11 to 1 Pacific Coast time. You can watch us on the All Things Comedy YouTube page. I highly recommend watching them because they usually get taken down for Ari being naked for no apparent reason.
He does like to take his clothes off. Hey, you know what? To each their own. I talked to Danish and O'Neill yesterday, and they were talking about going to the
hanging with them last night.
Rams game last weekend. Please apologize to them for me. It was kind of a clunky interview, which I'm blaming myself for, but I was not used to talking to guys on different cell phones, and so I have to apologize because the interview was a little bit awkward because of that, but those guys are hilarious. I listen to their podcast as well.
Two of the funniest people on the planet, in my opinion.
No doubt. All right, Jason, let's get to the NFL games. We'll start with last weekend, and I wanted to ask you about your Falcons because, according to everybody, in August, this was a team that was going to experience a serious Super Bowl hangover. Wrong about that. They go out and dominate the Packers on Sunday night, absolutely kick their ass. Green Bay scored some points in the fourth quarter to make it look closer than that game actually was. How good do you feel right now as an Atlanta fan?
Well, I tell you what, man, I wasn't buying into the hype of all the Super Bowl hangover and all that. I mean, you know, it's a new team, new year, new offensive coordinator, everything. You know, these guys are pros. That's something you just never get over. You know, that's like you get into a car accident when you're in high school. You drive again. It's not like you never drive again. You might always remember the car accident. You might always have a limp from it, but it's not like you don't get behind the wheel. And I was nervous, man. The Bears, they did not look like – they look like how I was hoping they would look against Green Bay. It's going to be a real test this week. I think the best game of the week is Falcons at Detroit. I think those are the two best teams in the NFC right now. Again, everyone calm down. It's only week three. But right now, I think those are the two best teams in the NFC. And Atlanta's going to be on the road. We'll see who's who right there. That's going to be a real who's who in the NFC. I think both those two teams are playoff teams.
You give the preface that it is just week two, but you also just said the Lions are a playoff team, so you think they're legit. You think they have a chance to win the NFC Central?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, the Packers, we've seen who they are. I think the Packers are a little long in the tooth at some positions. And, their backfield doesn't scare any defensive coordinator. I mean, it's a converted – Montgomery's a converted wide receiver to running back, and – brought on all these people to maybe kind of win that job, and that guy still won the job. To me, that tells me there's nobody behind him. And if I'm a defensive coordinator, it's just like, man, you know, get to Aaron Rodgers, beat the Packers. And the Falcons prove that. You get to Aaron Rodgers, you beat the Packers.
That's a great
team with a good defense like Detroit. Man, that front seven, front eight of Detroit is solid.
Yeah, they're extremely salty, and that's a great point on Montgomery as well. They did bring a lot of guys in for that competition, and the converted wide receiver is the one who wins out. You know, he's had his moments here and there over the past few seasons. I've never been blown away by him at that position. I think that just speaks to the Packers' neglect of the running back over here. I mean, how long were they just feeding the ball to fat Eddie Lacy, just hoping that he would regain his rookie year form, and it never happened?
What happened to him, man? I mean, he was a healthy scratch for Seattle last week. Everybody that has Eddie Lacy in your fantasy leagues, drop him. He is now fourth on their depth chart, and they didn't even dress it. He was like, man, just stay at home. Go hit a Denny's, you fat ass.
All right, and the Dallas Cowboys just absolutely get their asses kicked by Denver in the Mile High City last weekend. Looks like Cowboys may have some chinks in their armor, starting with Dez Bryant, who doesn't look nearly the same that he was a couple of years ago when he was this dominant receiver. I know a lot of people have said that Denver has exposed the game plan for stopping the Cowboys' offense. You stack the box, and you play a very physical brand of football on the outside against the receivers. I'm not sure if all defenses can execute that game plan, though. Denver is one of the best in the league on that side of the football.
Arguably the best at defense. I mean, plus it was at Denver. I mean, you know, that's a tough game for Dallas. I think what we're seeing here, and I was talking about this the other night, is with Dallas, I think in this offseason, what did we hear the most about in this offseason? The Falcons collapsed, sure, and it was a meme joke. But every football show and every ESPN thing that was forced down our throat was the Dallas Cowboys are back. And, you know, they have a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. You want to talk about if anybody's going to have a hangover year two, it would be a team like that. And I think they drank a little bit of their own Kool-Aid all offseason. And just thought about, I'm not saying they didn't work and they haven't, you know, put in time, but I think the leaders of this team were rookies last year now. They handed the baton to these guys to go, this is your team now. You know, I think they need a veteran to step up and kind of go, hey, let's all focus here. We're not as great as everybody's been telling us we were all in the offseason just because we finally made the playoffs again.
Absolutely. The Cowboys play the Cardinals on Monday Night Football this week. Arizona, another one of those teams that people had a lot of expectations on. They've looked like crap so far this year.
I think they're going to be garbage. That's another team, especially now with David Johnson gone. That's a whole different team, man. He's gone for 8 weeks. That's a whole different team. Carson Palmer, I mean, look, man, I just turned 45. I remember hanging out with Carson Palmer when we were in elementary school together. We actually didn't, but I'm just saying, that dude's about my age. I mean, Carson Palmer hasn't had a great year in like 2 or 3 years. I mean, that's a quarterback that's, if anybody's long in the tooth, it's them. I mean, he's not the, I mean, hell, he played with the Bengals for a decade. Remember that?
That's true. Yeah, and now they've got
it. With Arizona long enough, no one even remembers he played with the Bengals for a decade. He's been with Arizona that long.
And now he's got now they've got Andy Dalton in Cincinnati, and a lot of people are saying that Andy Dalton is done as a quarterback too. I don't know if I necessarily buy that, but can Cincinnati pull out of the funk that they found themselves in through two games?
I don't think so. I think Cincinnati's another team that's there. I mean, I'm saying done. I mean, I'm not saying hang it up. I don't see Cincinnati running nine in a row or, you know, I mean, they're already fired. They fired a coach midseason. It's week two. They've already fired a staff member. You know, they have other offensive coordinator. They're fired week after week two. They fired their offensive coordinator. That, to me, that's a sign that, you know, it's like, you know, your neighbors, they might be going through a divorce. I think they're doing okay. Then their house is for sale. And you're like, oh, the writing might be on the wall. You know what I mean? I mean, I think the Bengals are going to have a fire sale.
That's a pretty big red flag. You're right about that. Through 2 weeks in the season, Jason Tebow of NFL Red Zone also does stand-up comedy out in Los Angeles. Are there any other teams that are really impressing you? You talked about the Lions, of course, the Falcons as well. Any other 2-0 squads that you're pretty blown away by right now?
Man, everybody in the AFC should be worried about the Chiefs. Everybody should be worried about the Chiefs coming to town. Chiefs are, man, their defense looks good. They got crazy gimmicky plays. Alex Smith's jersey's never dirty. He's never even getting sacked. And they got so many fast, specialized players. Chiefs are fun to watch, man. Chiefs are fun to watch. Between Hunt and Hill, I mean, both those guys are 5'9 in heels, and they are fast. Fast. Just little midgets. Remind me of like a Eric Metcalf or Darren Sproles when he was unstoppable when he was younger.
You talked about the joystick players last week. They just have a bunch of those guys, huh?
They sure do. Steelers look good. I'm interested to see how Tampa does and how Miami does this week because we've only seen them really play once. And it'll be interesting to see what they do to maintain health because now they don't get a bye week. They got to play 16 straight weeks. And if they make the playoffs, they got to play 19 straight weeks.
Yeah, you know, specifically on Miami, Jason, I see people saying, oh, Jay Cutler proved everybody wrong, but I know from having watched him during the meat of his Chicago Bears career, this is what Jay Cutler does. When there's zero expectations lumped onto the guy, he looks like an all-pro. But the reality of the situation is he's not made a single Pro Bowl, and as soon as there is that expectations and defenses adapt to him, he is slow to adjust, and he looks like a very mediocre quarterback over the stretch of an entire season.
Yeah, Jay Cutler plays smart when you think he's going to play dumb, and when it seems obviously to, you know, not do some, you know, he does the opposite. You know, he plays stupid when it's easy to do something smart. Here's what's interesting to me about Jay Cutler, though, and this is where everybody should give this guy a break. A month ago, this guy was on his couch, maybe going to do a TV gig, commentating, probably not working out that month. A month later, he now moves from Chicago, or I think he lives in San Diego, moves from here to Miami, starts training with the team, then a hurricane comes. This guy moves into a hurricane. Now he's like not living at home for 2 weeks while they fix his house and fix everything he's going through, and it's still got a W.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And a month before that, he was taking naked pictures with a former MTV reality star, where he could expose his ass to all of Instagram.
I mean, that's a pretty crazy 2 months if you think about that.
No doubt about that. Jason Tebow of the NFL Red Zone joins us right now and every Friday at noon to talk football. And one of the games that I'm curious about, Jason, is the Giants at the Eagles this weekend. I had New York pegged to win that division. A lot of people thought Philly and Washington would be competing for last place in that division. However, Eli Manning, the most clutch, mediocre quarterback in the history of this league, has looked like something less than mediocre through the first 2 weeks.
Garbage.
And hasn't had a whole lot of help around him either. Odell Beckham came back last week, was decent. His capacity wasn't limited, but he was not able to do the things that we've come to expect of him over the past few years in terms of taking over ball games. Is this a make-or-break week for the Giants, even though we are only 3 weeks into the season?
A make-or-break is a good way of putting that. I think the finger-pointing has started. In New York, it's a very tough media town. Giants, like 2-0, I mean 0-2. They have no offensive line, man, and that is a tough thing to fix. That's not like a, you know, let's go out and pick a receiver up or, you know, let's bench this. I mean, it's when you have no O-line, I mean, Eli is not a guy that's moving around in the pocket like Prescott or one of these guys that can move around and move the pocket around and extend a play. I mean, Eli's a three-step, get rid of it, five-step, get rid of it. And if you're touching him within those 3 to 5 steps, it's a house of cards. And we've watched that for 2 weeks now. I don't know how they fix that. I thought it was going to be between the Giants and the Cowboys, honestly. Giants went out and, I mean, they picked up Brandon Marshall, who has 2 more catches this year than you and I. and you know, they're like, this guy will come in and compete, and he's a big red zone target for Eli. Man, they haven't done anything. It's really been shocking, and it goes to show, man, a football game is won in those trenches, especially when you have a pocket passer that is like a prototypical 3-step, 5-step drop guy. If he can't do that, if he doesn't have time, that's it. And I don't think the Eagles are screwing around. They're fun to watch. Eagles are pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, as good as Kansas City has looked this year, Philly was hanging with them all the way until the fourth quarter. Philly was very competitive in that ball game. You're right about that.
Yeah, and Nelson Aguilar is coming on. Who's the receiver that they got from Chicago? He actually looks pretty good there.
Alshon Jeffrey,
yep. You know, they got a good tight end. Their quarterback play is phenomenal, and that's another quarterback that can move the pocket. I mean, if those two teams switch quarterbacks, Eagles are still playing great, and Giants might be 2-0.
That's an interesting theory. You know. I think I like that one as well. And last question here for Jason Tebow before we let him go. I know you have like 4, 5, 12 fantasy football teams. How are your fantasy football teams doing this year?
Pretty good. I'll tell you who's been screwing me is Brandon Marshall. You know, I got him late in a couple leagues. And I've started him in a couple of different leagues, especially week one when Beckham was out. I'm like, Marshall's going to get 10 balls thrown his way. Nothing. So I'm out of the Brandon Marshall business. I had Eddie Lacy in a couple. I've already dropped him. I would have traded Eddie Lacy for a turkey sandwich if anybody else would have offered that after week one. 5 carries for 3 yards. But I'm 2-0 in the Comedy Store League. I am 1-1 in the Red Zone League. That one is brutal. And I am in my Punch Drunk League. I'm also 2-0. So I'm basically 5-1 in 3 leagues.
Okay, you're doing really well then. Congratulations on that, at least through 2 weeks in the season. Plenty more of football to go. Jason Tebow joins us every Friday at noon to talk NFL. We are very happy about that because Jason does a great job. And you can follow him on Twitter at the Teeb, T-E-E-B. But you spell his name Jason with a Y, and Tebow is not like Tim Tebow. No, it's T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T. Make sure to give him a follow on Twitter and check out his work online as well. Jason, thank you as always for the time.
You got it. Always my pleasure, Trey. Hey, go Cowboys. Good luck beating the Cardinals.
Thanks, brother. Jason Tebow. Right, check
brother.
Him out.
Happy Jew year. Happy Jew year.
And happy Jew year to Brad Kellner and everybody else who celebrates Rosh Hashanah. And yes, I see it on the Specs text line, 337-3776. The only way the Lions win the NFC Central is with a time machine. Try NFC North. Ha, 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 ha. You're right about that. You caught me. I had a senior moment right there where I went back to 2001, which was the last time that division was called the Central and not the North. But you know what? Now that I think about
it, I didn't catch that either.
I didn't, you know, and now that I think about it, this is like the Sears Tower or Willis Tower, where I think I'm still insisting on calling it the NFC Central. I think it's stupid they had to change the name to the NFC North. I still call it the Sears Tower in Chicago, damn it.
So do I.
We went out on the Sky Ledge in the Sears Tower when we took my family took a vacation there this summer. It's the Sears Tower. It's the NFC Central.
It sure is. People are like, hey, can you give me directions to Willis Tower? I'm like, I have no idea what town you're talking about.
Exactly. All right, Jason, thanks, man. We'll talk to you next week.
You're the best, man. Cheers, guys. Cheers.
Cheers to Jason Tebow. All right, coming up next, it's a college football conversation with Stuart Mandel, formerly of Fox Sports, now with The Athletic. He's the editor-in-chief for The Athletic's college football coverage. You don't know about this website yet, you want to, and I'll tell you about it more coming up here on Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn. Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Specs text line is 337-3776. Keep them coming. I will go ahead and read some at the end of the show. However, right now on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline, we welcome Stuart Mandel to the show. He is now the editor-in-chief of The All-American, which is the college football arm of a great new sports writing website, The Athletic. You can find that at theathletic.com. He also does the Audible podcast with Bruce Feldman. And thank you so much for you guys bringing that podcast back. I know it went on a little bit of a hiatus this summer. Follow him on Twitter at SL Mandel. Stuart, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
How are you?
Doing very well, thank you very much. And before we get going on the college football talk preview in the weekend, getting your thoughts on how Texas has looked through the first 3 games this year, I did want to give you an opportunity to let the people know about one of my new favorite sports sites, The Athletic, and just what your endeavor is with the All-American.
Well, thank you. Yeah, The Athletic is a network of sports subscription sites all under one umbrella, and ours is The All-American, which is the national college football site. Myself and a team of writers from around the country who have written for places like USA Today and ESPN.com, covering nothing but college football all year round. And without autoplay videos, pop-up ads, filling out surveys to read the rest of the articles, just nothing but good written articles and the one picture that goes in it. People who have tried it and signed up, rave about the clean reading experience.
It is a subscription service. You have to pay a little bit, but trust me, it is well worth it. Like Stuart said, you don't have to deal with a bunch of clunky ads or obnoxious videos. And I don't know if you saw this or not, Stuart, but earlier in the week it came out that Fox Sports, which of course made a big shift from writing to more video, has seen a big decline in the amount of people going to their website. I don't know about you, but me, as somebody who loves long-form writing, I found that at least a little bit amusing.
Well, the business model of free journalism is just broken, and that's how people like, you know, Ken Rosenthal was, you know, still is at Fox, but there's nowhere for him to write his article. Same with Bruce Feldman. So these are the best of the best, and they're covering their sports, and they had to find new places to write. So Ken's with The Athletic now. Seth Davis is with The Athletic now for college basketball. You know, because the 20-year model of giving away your life's work for free just can't be monetized. So sites are like Fox are going in that direction because that's the, you know, the only way they can think of to make some money. But really, that's not what the audience wants. And so I think what The Athletic has done and was very smart is to say, we know that there are still millions and millions of people out there who want to read the articles. They don't want to watch talking head videos and are going to be willing to pay, you know, basically less than the price of a Starbucks drink per month to read all these articles.
Absolutely. And Stuart, before we get to this weekend's games and some of the other general happenings in college football, I did want to get your thoughts on how the Texas Longhorns have looked in Tom Herman's first season. 1-2 entering conference play next week in Ames, Iowa. It's a Thursday night game against Iowa State. What are your impressions of how UT has looked in 2017?
Well, obviously the USC game was very encouraging. It was, you know, a night and day defensive performance from what we saw the first game against Maryland. And I did think that game against Maryland might prove to be an aberration. It was, you know, an 11 a.m. first Saturday of the season, probably not expecting Maryland to come out and be as multifaceted an offense as they were. So, you know, the encouraging thing is they were able to hold a very, very talented USC offense in check for most of that game. I do think the offense and who's going to be quarterback will continue to be problematic as they go through the season.
And Stuart, this conversation has become a hot topic this week here in Austin. Do you have an opinion one way or the other of whether UT should start Shane Buechele or Sam Ehlinger going forward?
You know, I think Shane Buechele's earned the right to, you know, give it another try this week. But it's, you know, it's a situation where once people have gotten a taste of the hotshot freshman, they're going to continue to want that unless Buechele just completely separates himself. You know, Ehlinger made some mistakes in that USC game. There's no question about it. But he also injected some life into the offense, which we hadn't necessarily seen. But we have to remember that Shane Buechele has more than a season's of work, a body of work at this point. Has definitely had some great moments. So I'm all for, you know, I'm fine with the decision to have him take back over. I just think Tom Herman's going to have to manage that carefully so that it doesn't become a season-long back and forth in a season-long controversy.
No doubt. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic joins us right now. Follow him on Twitter at SL Mandel. And The Athletic's college football arm, The All-American, is what Stuart is the editor-in-chief of. A couple of ranked matchups this weekend in college football, Stuart. The one that people in this conference are paying closest attention to is number 16 TCU at number 6, Oklahoma State. Do you see the Cowboys winning this one fairly easily? And if not, what does TCU have to do well in order to pull off the upset?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody, the Oklahoma State's offense has been unstoppable so far, but if anybody can come up with an answer for it, it's probably Gary Patterson. You know, that's a proven defensive coach who has slowed down a lot of prolific offenses over the years. Is it going to be enough to win the game in Stillwater? You know, at this point in the season, I think we would consider that a shocker. I mean, I think Oklahoma State is a team that will contend for the Big 12 title and for a playoff spot. But, you know, TCU looks defense looked great against Arkansas a few weeks ago, and so would not surprise me at all if this is a very competitive game.
And the other ranked matchup is Mississippi State at Georgia. Mississippi State looked really good last weekend and really handling LSU. Do the Bulldogs of Mississippi State have it in them to do so 2 weeks in a row and going into a matchup where they are the lesser ranked of two teams and beating the Bulldogs of Georgia?
Well, I think Mississippi State, that Dan Mullen's got a team this year that has a chance to be very special. Nick Fitzgerald is a great quarterback. They looked, you know, that offense looked very dominant against LSU, but I think by the same token, Georgia has a chance to take a huge leap from year one to year two under Kirby Smart. That defense is unbelievable. I mean, just stacked top to bottom, completely shut down a Notre Dame running game that in Notre Dame's other two games has gone for over 400 and in one case over 500 yards just on the ground. So I am picking Georgia, but with the you know, understanding that either way would not surprise me.
Is Dan Mullen long for Starkville, or do you expect him after the season to go elsewhere? If so, where?
Well, I mean, there have been many times over the 9 years he's been there that everybody assumed that he was going to get the Florida job when that ended up going to Jim McElwain, or he might get the Miami job when it came open. And for whatever reason, he's never been the guy that they actually picked. So, you know, I think if they do end up having a really big season this year, he'll go back to being in demand. And, you know, he's a guy, when people talk about whether Notre Dame might have an opening, that's a guy who comes up for that as a possibly natural fit. But he's been there 9 years now. He's not, if this was going to be a springboard job, you would have thought he would have left by now.
Two matchups in the Big Ten involving ranked teams going to play unranked teams at that unranked team's home stadium, Michigan, Purdue, and then also Penn State, Iowa. Which of those two matchups do you think has a better chance to experience an upset?
I think they both have that potential. I went with Purdue over Michigan because we knew Michigan was coming into the season very inexperienced on both sides of the ball, and the offense so far has really struggled. And now they're going against a Purdue team that I think is much improved on offense under Jeff Brohm, and I think could give them a lot of fits. Michigan's defense is certainly capable of slowing them down, but they're going to have to score some points. This is not a game Michigan can realistically win with the level of offensive production that they had against Florida, which was pretty modest. They had two pick sixes in that game, and certainly this past week against Air Force.
A&M and Arkansas are in Dallas this weekend for their annual meeting at Jerry World. The game seems secondary to the chatter that both Kevin Sumlin and Brett Bielema are on very hot seats at the respective schools. Do you expect this to be the last season for each in Fayetteville and also College Station?
I think Sumlin's seat is considerably hotter, and we know that because his AD was not afraid to call him out in the offseason, and then obviously, you know, the UCLA game, that could not have been a worse start to a season for a guy who's on the hot seat. So, you know, I think if they lose this game to Arkansas, second loss already, you're going to start to hear those cries get pretty loud. I know Arkansas fans are getting frustrated with Brett Bielema. I don't think Jeff Long is necessarily eager to make that change. I think that would only come if the bottom really falls out and they, you know, end up having a really disastrous season.
Former Longhorns coach Charlie Strong is now at South Florida. Last night, number 21, South Florida, the Bulls, they take care of business over Temple, 43-7. Really sloppy offensive game, even though the Bulls do end up putting up 43 points. A lot of that is on the six turnovers, some of which were unforced by the Owls. Do you think Charlie Strong possesses the ability to go undefeated this year? And if so, does that say anything more about his abilities as a head coach?
He inherited a very good team, a team that won 11 games last season and returned a quarterback who I describe as the kind of the group of five, Lamar Jackson and Quentin Flowers. But, you know, to this point so far, they seem like they're struggling is not the right word because they put up a lot of points and yards. But, you know, as you said, it's a little bit sloppy. The adjustment to the to Sterling Gilbert's style of offense has not gone great. So I don't think they're going to go undefeated, and I no longer necessarily, you know, I know they're still in the top 25, but there are other group of five teams out there like Memphis, who had the big win over UCLA last week, like San Diego State, which has now beaten two Pac-12 teams, that if I'm guessing who's going to get that New Year's Six berth, to me, those teams are on more solid footing right now than USF.
Final thing here for Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. Please do check out theathletic.com. Yes, it's a subscription to join the website and read these great long-form pieces on all sorts of different sports, but it is well worth it. Trust me on that one. He is the editor-in-chief of the All-American, which is the college football arm there. Stuart, if you had to pick four for the end-of-season playoff, who are those four teams right now?
Right now, I got the same two everybody has, in Alabama and Clemson, and then Oklahoma State and Washington. Somebody's got to get left out. You know, I'm reluctant to leave Penn State out of that mix right now, but You know, I really like Oklahoma State right now, the way they're playing. And Washington, to me, slightly more likely than USC right now in my mind to win the Pac-12.
Stuart Mandel, thank you as always for the time. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. All right. That is Stuart Mandel, one of the best in the business at covering college football. He also does a podcast. Everybody does a podcast these days, so you have to pick and choose. But I promise you, The Audible with Stuart Mandel and Bruce Feldman, it is a weekly listen for me. It's not one of those crazy long podcasts either. They usually clock in at under an hour. Check that out on iTunes. They do a great job of breaking down the world of college football. All right, coming up next, we will read some of your text messages. One in particular just absolutely roasts me in my interview abilities. I want to read that over the air. Though, we'll talk about that and read some more, and we'll speak with Rod Babers prior to the Rodcast, which is from 1 to 3 on the Horn, followed by Chad and Kevin in the afternoons from 3 to 7. Right now, though, you're listening to Midday with Trey and No BK on the Horn.
Shooting the bull.
That one of BK's heifers?
You know, even though I put together that intro before we had the whole heifer rotator, maybe it was. Maybe it is the exact same soundbite that you used in your heifer rotator. Do you get a play? Yeah. Oh, there's the screaming heifer right there, which Brad claims that they don't even possess the ability to scream like that. Rod Babers joins me in studio now. There really isn't much of a shooting the bull today, but it is still sponsored by Tom McKay and Audio Visual Consultations. Go to their website, avconsultations.com. Check out what they do, whether it's home or commercial. They will set you up. The audio, the visual, they got you covered. I keep saying it, but DKR has the video part covered now. They still need to get the audio thing figured out. They should give Tom McKay and AV Consultations a call to help out with all of that. What's up, Rod? How you doing today?
What's going on, brother? Yeah, of course Brad would know how a heifer sounds. Isn't he a country? He's a country guy, right?
He went to high school at J.J. Pierce, so he's a Dallas suburbs kid.
I was always talking about Kansas and stuff, so I thought he was a country dude.
He was born in Kansas, You know, we all assume that even the larger towns in Kansas are amidst wheat fields.
Yeah,
but I think,
so that's what I figured. Yeah, he spent a lot of time with cows and heifers and things like that. Nature.
In his college life, he definitely did, but those weren't so much from pastures as much as they were Dirty Sixth Street that he was gathering those from.
Hey, man, after 1 a.m., you know, all bets are off.
All bets are off. What's up today on the Rodcast?
Nothing. It's going to be nothing but football, pretty much. We're going to obviously have Football Friday, so we'll talk about the game last night, the most exciting game in the history of Thursday Night Football, actually. It was the highest scoring in the history of Thursday Night Football. We'll talk about that. Consider Brian Hoyer used to be the quarterback for the Texans. As a Texans fan, I felt a little bad watching that game. He threw for like 330-something yards, 3 touchdowns. And I'm like, that is Brian Hoyer if he is well-coached in a right system that acclimated to his skill set. So, you know.
It has to make you question whether Bill O'Brien is the true quarterback whisperer that everybody has called him for so many years.
I've said before, he's not a quarterback whisperer. That's just, that's a fugazi. That's a fugazi, all right? That's a ruse. What he is, he's a great manager in crisis situations. So I think that is kind of his talent. But he's everybody thinking he's a quarterback guru. He's not a quarterback guru.
So he should be in PR for the Texans, then, is what you're saying.
He should.
I guess
we'll
he kind of is.
He's got a hell of a test, though, coming up, going on the road to play the Patriots, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, his old, of course, mentor, Bill Belichick.
And Belichick has a way of making inexperienced quarterbacks look exactly like that, whereas Deshaun Watson had his moments versus Cincinnati and also the week before against Jacksonville, especially that first drive. I'm a little bit concerned for Deshaun going into this weekend's matchup with the Pats.
I agree. The Pats, though, they don't really have the pass rush that they've had in recent years. And I agree with you, though. Rookie quarterbacks are 0-8 versus Bill Belichick since he's been the head coach of the Patriots when they're playing in Foxborough. So, yeah, it's a Herculean task. But they can run the football. Deontay Foreman, Deshaun Watson, and DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, that would pretty much be the offense. That's it.
I'd like to see Deontay this weekend. I know last week he carried the ball a whole lot more. I'd like to see him do what we became accustomed to here in Austin, and that is really picking up the pace in the second half of games and taking games over. It seemed like he maybe got a little bit cold because he wasn't receiving it as much early on in the third quarter last week, and so when they turned to him finally, it just didn't look like he had that extra step, that extra gear that we love so much out of Deontay. But I think that we'll see that this week if they do give him the opportunities.
I think he has to get the opportunity. The quarterbacks who have beaten Bill Belichick as rookie quarterbacks, I believe he's 15-5 as a head coach against rookie quarterbacks. The five quarterbacks that have done it, they've averaged 166. Their teams have averaged 166 yards rushing on the ground. So you got to run it. That's the key.
Absolutely.
Manage that game for your rookie.
With any rookie quarterback, you need him to be more of a game manager than somebody who's going to take the game over. There is the occasional exception. Vince Young, his rookie year, was able to take games over, but that was more about his legs than throwing the football around.
Unique skill set.
Absolutely. Yeah. Deshaun possesses the ability to do that. Obviously, he had the 50-plus yard run last week, but for the most part, the Patriots aren't going to have breakdowns like that. You can't expect those types of random fluke plays to beat a team like New England like you could the Cincinnati Bengals last
weekend. Hey, everybody said the same thing about Deshaun versus Nick Saban in that defense. So it'll be fun to see if he can have some of that, fairy dust, that pixie dust, whatever Tom Herman has. That stuff.
Yeah, I bet the Texans would love to have the defense that the Clemson Tigers did and have right now too, right?
J.J. Watt, Whitney Merciless, not bad.
I'm starting to wonder if J.J. Watt, because of the back surgery, this may be on the decline now. Much like Dez Bryant, although Dez had foot surgery, of course. Dez Bryant does not look like the same guy, and we're wondering if the best years are behind him now. I do think J.J. Watt possesses the ability to be better than Dez Bryant is currently. All right, check out the Rodcast from 1 to 3, followed by Chad and Kevin from 3 to 7. And you've been listening to Midday with Trey and BK. Brad Kellner back on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend.